It would be good to start with the fact that Krishna is behind me, watching over me, as usual, and begin with that topic, but it's not where we're going to begin. We're going to begin with something very rotten, unfortunately, and that is our position in the material world. And it's required to understand our position in the material world because a superficial change in consciousness or an activity, this will not get us to where we want to go, the soul's natural position, which is as Krishna's servants. Jivera, Sarup Hoy. What's the next part? Krishner Nityadas. This is who we are. This is actually who we are. But unfortunately, at this time, Krishna Bulese Ji, forgetting Krishna, Anadi Bahyamukh, we have turned our back on Krishna. And what happens to those souls who turn their backs on Krishna? Well, you end up in a predicament like this. In an imitation Krishna position, imagining what? That I'm the center of everything. So therefore, Kaviraj Goswami says, Krishna bhule se jivan adi bahimukh atta eva, therefore maya tare, the illusory energy gives all conditioned souls who want to imagine their Krishna, that they are Krishna, a position in the material world in which indeed we can think of ourselves in illusion as the center of existence. But rather than becoming blissful, atta eva maya tare samsareta duk, we end up just having the miseries of repeated birth and death. We have to get to the core of the problem, actually, and it is very, very difficult to reach the core. Different processes of self-realization, yoga, jnana, different religions, performing austerities, engaging in charity, the whole Vedic culture, things that are meant to take away the different levels, the different peels around our false sense of self, they are not sufficient to get to the core, the change that actually has to be made. And what that change is and will be, we will gradually hear right now. Of course, we know what this is. The problem, I used to think, not that it's not true, but I used to think that my biggest problem was with my mind. And to some degree, that is true. But that's nothing compared to the problem of false ego. This is the root of the problem. Haribol. Hare Krishna. So what we're going to hear from first is the third canto. And this to understand these type of truths is why we are recommended to begin the Bhagavatam not with the 10th canto in the Rasa Lila sections, but rather in the beginning, naturally in the beginning of the book. Here in the third canto, some extremely important principles are described. And indeed, the chapter that we're going to look through a bit is called The Fundamental Principles of, this is chapter 26 in the third canto, The Fundamental Principles of what? Anyone know the last two words? Material nature, the fundamental principles, the underlying principles of material nature, that which makes the material nature work in such a way that it captures the living entity. It doesn't exactly capture the living entity on its own, by its own power. It's because of this false ego. This allows the living entity, or Maya, Krishna's Maya Shakti, to hold so tightly so that the living entity, practically speaking, cannot get out. Deviyeshu gunamayi mama maya dratyaya. And of course, the remainder of that verse, mameivate prapadyante mayametantarantite, describes the release, the full release of the living entity from the material nature. And it has to do with what? Mameivate prapadyante. Prapadyante means the surrender of the living entity. What does it mean when the living entity, me, you know, we talk about living entities as if they're, you know, they're, of course they are everywhere. But the living entity is me. What affects the release from Maya is when I, or any living entity, places himself very humbly at the lotus feet of Krishna and surrenders. Jivera sarupoi Krishna niti. Very difficult to do. In fact, as long as we have false ego, it is impossible. Because ego means identity. False ego means a false sense of self. Anything other than I am Krishna's servant, this is false ego. And really, it has to be given up. A change of identity. A change of sense of feeling who we are. My sense of who I am has to be changed at that deepest level, that I am Krishna's. So, in the fundamental principles, what is the fundamental principle? The most fundamental principle of material nature is not at all material, amazingly enough. It's Krishna. Everything is resting on him as, what does the Bhagavad Gita say? Yes. Or I could say as the beads, well, not pearls yet, not these anyway, but these are actually siddhabakul pieces of wood. As the siddhabakul pieces of wood are strung on, you cannot see the string, but yet it is there, it is resting upon it. Yes? So similarly, everything is resting on Krishna. So therefore, the most fundamental principle of material nature is Krishna. Third verse of the 26th chapter. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Soul. And he has no beginning. He is transcendental to the material modes of nature and beyond the existence of this material world. He is perceivable everywhere because he is self-effulgent, Swayam Jyoti. The cause of his life, his effulgence, the cause of everything, it just comes from him. There is no external cause, Sarva Karana Karanam. He is self-effulgent. By his self-effulgent luster, the entire creation is maintained. Everything is resting on him as the pearls are strung on the thread. We won't read the entire chapter right now. Our next verse, which describes the first aspect of the material world. Because the material world is emanating from Krishna ultimately, Krishna's Shakti, Krishna's energy, and it is resting upon Krishna's effulgence. But the first aspect of the material world in existence is neither material actually nor spiritual. It is between and is called pradhan. And in this pradhan simply means the primal, or the first. This is the first thing of the material world. Not quite material, not quite spiritual, in between. Everything of the material world is there in a very subtle, unmanifest form. Like a big soup, something like that. But there is nothing manifest yet of the material world. That is called pradhan in text 10. The unmanifested eternal combination of the three modes, this is what the pradhan is the cause of the manifest state. It is called pradhan, the first, the primal. It is called prakriti when in the manifest stage of existence. Changes, and we'll hear about that change in a moment. What happens is this cloud that's resting on the effulgence, which Prabhupada sometimes refers to as the cloud of material nature or the pradhan. Krishna is there in the form of the supersoul or the Karanadaksha Vishnu or Mahavishnu, who is the supersoul of the entire material creation. And what he does is he glances at this supi pradhan. And it begins to change. Within that glance, or it begins to manifest into the material energy. Within that glance are the living entities, the jivatmas. Each and every one of us, plus every jivatma in the entirety of material existence. And the karma of those living entities, plus the time factor and other things. The time factor is what makes everything work in the material world. It pushes everything forward. But it takes the living entities and their karma to also move the material world, but the time factor moves that. When that glance enters the pradhan, it gradually changes into what is called the mahatattva. And the first thing, when the consciousness, when the Lord's internal energy and his glance enters this pradhan and it begins turning into the mahatattva, it becomes very effulgent because the Lord is adding consciousness to it. And it's like a giant golden, it becomes effulgent, golden effulgent, due to consciousness, due to life. And immediately, it actually describes, because this is in the Sankhya system of philosophy, the purpose of Sankhya is described. Sankhya literally means counting. So there are 25 elements within this material realm, and the 25th element is the time factor, the 26th element is the supersoul upon which everything is resting. But all the elements are there, and they have manifested. The first thing that manifests, so the purpose of Sankhya is to count the material elements, to divide material existence into its component parts. And there are again 24 of these component parts plus the 25th of time and the 26th of the supersoul. So to divide them into its component parts so that we can see one thing. Two things, actually. The first is that the soul, me, I, have nothing to do with this material world. And secondarily, everything rests upon the supersoul, upon Krishna. But when that glance enters, the first thing that is produced is consciousness. Actually, everything is produced more or less all at once, but chitta, or consciousness, is produced. And at first, consciousness is pure, swachatam. And in that pure consciousness, although it is composed of sattvagun, one can understand Vasudevam Savamiti Samahatma Sudolabha. A great soul can understand, who has pure consciousness, that there is nothing in existence other than the Lord. Which is what that first verse we read said. But then, that thing that is going to cloud consciousness appears. The first thing appears upon which everything else is based. And immediately it has to appear. Because the souls, the jivas are there, and the jiva's identity, the soul's identity is Krishna's servant. But in the material world, he will not act as Krishna's servant. He will give up his real identity and adopt a false identity. And therefore, the first thing that appears is false ego. And upon that, that first covering over clear consciousness, everything else in the material world is based. The entire material existence, although really based on Krishna, in a very tangible sense, is based simply on false ego. A false sense of I am Krishna, as Prabhupada said, as we read right in the beginning. An envy of Krishna, a turning our back on Krishna, a wanting to be Krishna, a wanting to experience reality as if I am the center. And indeed, that is the common factor that every living entity who is conditioned in this material world has. He's thinking, I am the center, and this is the effect of Maya, illusion, because obviously, I am not the center, obviously. So one by one, first, that false ego combines with the mode of goodness, which is manifest in the Mahatattva. And then from false ego combining with the mode of goodness, the demigods, the mind, and something perhaps else. Demigods in the mind are produced. False ego combines with the mode of passion and the intelligence. The five working and five knowledge acquiring senses are produced. And when false ego combines with the mode of good ignorance, then sound is produced. And from sound, then there's the sense of hearing, and then ether is produced. And then one by one, all the other elements that were lying unmanifest in the pradhan come into existence. What I wanted to explain, and what I really gathered, because recently I've taught this, and one of the benefits of being a teacher is that you have to, first of all, listen to what you say, because you can't fall asleep or let your mind wander too much because it becomes too embarrassing or whatever. And the other thing is you have to study, and you have to understand what's going on. And the deepest realization that I had, and I wasn't looking forward to studying this chapter, because it's complicated, it's technical, and generally no one wants to hear about the creation. But what I understood from this is that this false ego is the core of material existence. And, again, if I want to stop my material existence, actually stop it, it has to be changed. My sense of who I am has to be changed at that core level. I am Krishna's eternal servant. Eternal servant. Simply even knowing that I'm eternal is not sufficient. And this is the fault of the impersonalists. And therefore, Prabhupada calls it the last snare of Maya, impersonalism, Mayavad philosophy, because it's an incomplete understanding of one who is, of one's identity. To such a degree, one even knows that he's eternal. But he cannot admit that I am Krishna's eternally. This is the most difficult thing on one level for the conditioned soul to accept, that I am Krishna's. I have no other identity other than being Krishna's eternal servant. Everything else is a product of Maya. And when we start hearing this 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, if we don't have this deeply ingrained in our consciousness, when we hear, and Krishna willing, we shall hear, about what Vrindavan is like, we won't be able to enter into the spirit of what's Vrindavan like. Because we'll hear Krishna's going to walk around. Krishna's going to enter the Vrindavan forest. And the forest is jubilant. We'll hear how the trees are bowing down with their branches and their soft red buds to touch the lotus feet of Krishna. The bees are hovering around, serving Krishna in their own way, making a pleasing sound. the birds are doing what they're doing to please Krishna. The cowherd boys are playing in such a way as to please Krishna. The cowherd men and ladies, they're gathering things. If we get to the end of this 15th chapter, we shall hear this, how they're gathering things. They're getting presentations just to make Krishna and Balaram happy. And of course, the gopis of Vrindavan, everything that they do is just to please Krishna. This is real ego. If we are in the realm of false ego, which is turning the back on Krishna, when we hear these things, the thoughts will come to our consciousness, why is everyone trying to please Krishna? And subtly, what the false ego is crying out is, why isn't everyone trying to please
me?
Me, yes, me. Envy. Why isn't everyone trying to please me? That mood brings one to the material world. This mood, of which our Giriraj is the best of servants, teaches us how to please Krishna, make him the center of our life, because he's already the center of our life. He's already the center of the entirety of material existence. But we just have turned our back on him and we won't accept it. We prefer illusion that I am the center. The process of devotional service, as Kapila Muni explains, dissolves this whole sense. There are four subtle senses which are actually one, Kapila Muni describes. There is the citta or consciousness, there is the mind, there is the false ego, and there's one more, which is the intelligence. It's one subtle sense. But according to how this one subtle sense acts, it is called one of those four things. That is the subtle body. Except other than the consciousness, all this, this false sense of intelligence, of false ego, false sense of mind, the function of the mind is to hold on to things. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. The mind holds on to whatever it thinks that it's going to bring it pleasure in the full sense. And the other thing is dvesh. It pushes away anything that it thinks it's going to get in the way of its self-centeredness. So I do have problems with my mind, but it's really based on the real problem of false ego. Let's hear what Srila Prabhupada will now say. Adi Purush Prabhu, hand out the sheets, please. We'll put this down, but first I have to get it set up. In this, there's a series of lectures. Hari Bol. Is Gopinath at Govardhan Hill? Oops. Where? There's a Gopinath here. Wow. He looks pretty jolly. Happy to be here. This is Prabhupada speaking. It's in 1968 in Seattle. Very nice lectures. Whoops.
Better
hand them out fast.
Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami.
Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami.
Before the Prabhupada started the devotees chanting Jairada Madhava before class, he would chant this. This was the first aspect of a morning program practically to come into place.
This is the description of Krishna's abode.
My Bhagavat.
The Chintamani Prakara. As here we find houses are constructed of bricks. There the houses are constructed of Chintamani stone. That stone, you have heard the names. That stone, if you touch that stone into iron, the iron becomes gold. That is called philosopher's stone or touchstone. So, Chintamani, the land and the houses are made of touchstone, Chintamani, Prakata Sadhanasu. Kalpavriksha desert. There the trees are desert. Because they are all spiritual. Just like if I ask you, please bring me a glass of water, you can supply me. If I ask you, bring me something else, so you can bring me also. Because your spirit developed. But if I ask a tree, suppose supplying rose flower, if I ask, please bring me lavender flower, it cannot. Why? Because although it is spirit, it is not so developed. Here, we see spirit, consciousness, different stages of development. That makes different status of life. And that different status of life and varieties, 8,400,000 developing. Developing means different kinds of body, just like this child. Now this child has got a certain type of body. Its consciousness is according to that body. This child, when she will be grown up as a young girl, her consciousness will be different. The same child. So, the spirit soul is encased by this material body. And according to the body, the consciousness is different. It is very simple to understand. Take example of this child. The same child, the same spirit soul, because it is now dwelling in a different type of body, its consciousness is different than the mother's. Because the mother has got a different type of body. And a child has got a different type of body. So it is not very difficult to understand that our consciousness had a different type according to the body. So you go on developing. This human form of life is considered to be the most advanced animal. Human being is also called animal. According to logic, they are called rational animals. A human being is rational animal. And in the Vedas, Shastra also, they are called animal. Jantu. Jantu means animal. So, it is when that spiritual consciousness, that Krishna consciousness, is fully developed, full-fledged, just like a rose flower. It has got different stages. The bud stages, the second stage, the third stage, the fourth stage, And when it is the bosom flower with full fragrance and beauty and color, you like, oh, it is very nice flower. Similarly, you develop your consciousness. When it comes to the point of Krishna consciousness, fully developed, that is your perfection of life. That perfection of life is there. And the Chintamani, and the abode of Krishna, everyone, the tree, the animal, the cows, the birds, the bees, and the goddess of fortunes, they are called, all the women there, they are called goddess of fortune. Every woman is goddess of fortune. So, there, men are very beautiful, women are very beautiful, many, many thousand times are beautiful. These are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But, the men are attracted, but there is so much attraction for Krishna Kirtan that both men and women forget of anything of sex life. It is so nice, so attractive, that they have no more attraction for sex life. There is embracing, there is kissing, everything is there, but there is no sex life, because they have got another thing, param drishtani vartate, so sublime, so sweet, so transcendental, that they are simply absorbed in Krishna thought. That is Krishna consciousness, perfection of Krishna. So, Chintamani, they are the trees, they have accepted the form of trees willingly. I like to serve Krishna as a plant. I like to serve Krishna as a tree. I like to serve Krishna as this or that, so everything is there. Just like this calf is loving Krishna in his own way, and Krishna is also embracing,
calf
responding. Not that because it is calf animal, Krishna is neglecting, no. Krishna reciprocates his love. As you love him, so he also reciprocates. Jīja thāmāṁ prapaddhanti tāṁ sutta hiyo vajāṁ māṁ. Everyone is loving Krishna in different stages. And the response is there also by Krishna. So when you are full-fledged Krishna conscious, that is your perfection of life. So that can be seen in the transcendental abode of Krishna known as Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Vrindavan. That Goloka Vrindavan is descended with Krishna. When Krishna comes within this universe, he is Goloka Vrindavan also comes with him. Just like when the king goes somewhere, his all staff, his secretary, his military commander, his this, that, everyone goes with him. Similarly, when Krishna comes on this planet, all his paraphernalia, entourage, everyone comes to display, to attract us, that you are after this, you want to love. Here you see in Vrindavan how everything is based on love. There is nothing else. They do not know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't care to know it. But their natural affection and love is so intense for Krishna that they cannot think anything else except Krishna 24 hours. That is Krishna consciousness. The boys, cowherd boys, they go with Krishna in the forest with the cows. The whole day they enjoy company of Krishna. When they come home at night, as they are speaking with their mother, "Mother, Krishna is so wonderful. He met, there was a gigantic demon. He came, he was devouring us. And Krishna killed him. Oh, Maharaj said, oh, Krishna is, I know, very wonderful. That's all. He does not, they do not care whether Krishna is God or anything. But Krishna is very wonderful. Whenever there is some danger, they come to Krishna. There was heavy rainfall. They all came, all the villagers came to Krishna. Krishna, what is to be done? Krishna said, all right. I said, look, he was only 6 or 7 years old, a boy. He lifted the whole hill and made it an umbrella.
Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki jai.
So, this is Krishna love. Krishna love. They do not know Krishna, whether Krishna is God. They don't care to know. Brahma. No. Krishna is our lovable object. Everyone, the animals, the birds, the beasts, the flowers, the land, everyone loves Krishna. The gopi, they are thinking always Krishna. Krishna has gone to the forest. His soul is so soft. How he is traveling on the ground, which is full of so many particles of stone, and must be giving him pain. So they are thinking at home and becoming so sorry, crying, oh, Krishna must be very painful in this way. That is their thought, you see. Say, animals also, they are also thinking of wrong. Every cow had a different name. And as soon as Krishna is called by the name, just like this calf is there, the animal will come and with so ecstasy that milk will drop on the ground. When the cow is very jubilant, milk automatically comes. These descriptions are there. Govindamadi Purusantam. Very natural life, village life. Krishna is not interested with industry or this or that. Simply village life. The cows, the trees, nice land, nice Jamuna river, innocent cowherds, boys, innocent cowherds, I will say girls, and their father, their mother. This is called Braja.
Braja.
Very natural life. Chintamani prakara sadamasu kalpa vrikhala kyabhitesu suravi ravipalayantam. And Krishna is very fond of herding cows. What kind of cows? Suravi. Suravi means they are also spiritual cows. You can take as much milk as you like and as many times. There is no limit. Spiritual means unlimited. Everything is unlimited. Here you can milk a cow once in a day or twice in a day, and that is also limited supply. But there is no limit of supply. Suravi. And Lakshmi sahasra shata sambhrama sivamanam. Lakshmi, the gopis, they are all goddess of fortune. What are these gopis? What are these cows? They are expansion of Krishna. They are not different from Krishna. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhamitavi stavi eva nijarupataya kalavi goloka eva nivasatya khilatma bhuto govindamadi purisam tamahangayam. You read Brahma Samhita very carefully. These descriptions are there. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita. These cows, these gopis, these trees, this land, this house, this father, mother, friend, everyone, they are expansion of Krishna. They are not different from Krishna. Expansion. Ananda chinmaya rasa. The Krishna's body is Sachidananda vigraha, full bliss, full knowledge and eternal. And these cows, frames, land, trees, everything, they are all expansion. That is tested also here. When Brahma was illusion, that how is that? My Lord Krishna has come on this earthly planet as a cowherd boy he is playing. Let me see whether he is Krishna. So he stole all the cows, all the cowherd's boy, everything. And again, when Brahma came, he saw that everything is there. Although the stolen cows and boys were sleeping within a cave, but Krishna has got full expansion. Then he could understand that he is the Supreme Lord himself. Purnasya purnamadaya purnameva avasishya. Krishna is so full, that is mentioned in the Vedas, that the Supreme Absolute Truth is so full that if you take even the full from the full, still he is full. Here, if you take $100, and if you take $100, there is zero. But in the spiritual world, if you take $100 from $100, the $100 is still there. So Krishna is so full. So as we make advancement in spiritual knowledge, we can understand what is spiritual life. But if we meditate means if we think over what is actually spiritual life, we can understand that consciousness. This consciousness, purification of consciousness, and make the consciousness full with Krishna thought, that will make you advance in spiritual life.
The following is a lecture.
I think it was in Seattle in 1968. I'm pretty sure. It's not on the Veda base, but the tape is available.
1968.
Yeah, 68. Very wonderful series, lecture series then. Now, our basic theme of this aspect of the seminar is that material life is really a dream, and as we said, it is a dream based on this false ego. The next chapter of the Bhagavatam, after the 26th chapter, everyone knows what chapter that is, 27th chapter. Here's just some short quotations from that. Actually, there's two verses. This is the fourth and fifth verse. Actually, a living entity is transcendental to material existence. But because of his mentality of lording it over material nature, his material existential condition does not cease. And just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. In the dreaming state, one's consciousness is almost covered, and one sees many inauspicious things. But when he is awakened and fully conscious, such inauspicious things cannot bewilder him. Here are two parts of Prabhupada's purports from this fourth and fifth verse. Prabhupada says that the example of a dream is very appropriate. Due to different mental conditions in dreams, we are put into advantages and disadvantageous positions. Similarly, the spirit soul has nothing to do with this material nature. But because of his mentality of lording it over, he is put into the position of conditioned existence. Purport to 5. In the condition of dreaming, when one's consciousness is almost covered, one may see many unfavorable things which cause disturbance or anxiety. But upon awakening, although he remembers what happened in the dream, he is not disturbed. Later, Prabhupada will explain in the Bhagavatam that it's not exactly being in the material world, being in contact with the things of the material world that cause us trouble. It's simply our desire to lord it over the material world. That is the problem. That is the problem that places us under the control of the Maya Shakti. And Prabhupada gives the example that the to be near policemen isn't trouble if you are honest. General principle. Similarly, the position of self-realization or understanding one's real relationship with the Supreme Lord makes one completely satisfied. If not, if we don't have that, no matter what else we have, we will not be satisfied. And the three modes of material nature, which are the cause of all disturbances, cannot affect him. In contaminated consciousness, one sees everything to be for his own enjoyment. But in pure consciousness or Krishna consciousness, he sees that everything exists for the enjoyment of the Supreme Enjoyer. That is the difference between the dream state and wakefulness. The state of contaminated consciousness is compared to dream consciousness, and Krishna consciousness is compared to the awakened stage of life. Three more short quotations. Even Indra forgot his heavenly standard of life and is satisfied with the standard of a hog's life. By the influence of Maya, the conditioned soul becomes so affectionate towards its particular type of body that if he is offered, give up this body and immediately you will have a king's body, he will not agree. This attachment strongly affects all conditioned living entities. Lord Krishna is personally canvassing. Give up everything in this material world. Come to me, and I shall give you all protection. But we are not agreeable. We think we are quite all right. Why should we surrender unto Krishna and go back to his kingdom? This is called illusion or Maya. Everyone is satisfied with his standard of living, however abominable it may be. One has to be serious. This is the next to last one. Very short, three sentences. One has to be serious to cure this condition of material existence and transfer himself to Krishna consciousness. For thus his long suffering may be mitigated without difficulty. In summary, the suffering of the conditioned soul is due to his attachment to material nature. This attachment, and listen to this sentence very carefully, please. What is the suffering caused by? Tirtharaj Prabhu. Sorry. Wow, pretty good. I'm impressed. This attachment should thus be transferred from matter to
Krishna.
Yes, to Krishna. To Krishna. We must become attached to Krishna. No being attached to spirits. To Krishna. We must hear about Krishna. As we heard, we must become absorbed in Krishna. We must fall in love with Krishna. This is in the 27th chapter, 5th Prabhupada's purport in the 5th text. One particular point mentioned in this verse is very significant. It is said here, prasaktam asatam pati. The mind is always attracted by asat, the temporary material existence. Because we have been associated with material nature since time immemorial, we have become accustomed to our attachment to this temporary material nature. Then Prabhupada explains the cure. The mind has to be fixed at the eternal lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Savai mana Krishna pararavindayo. One has to fix the mind at the lotus feet of... Yes, of Krishna. And we heard about his lotus feet. What are the markings on Krishna's lotus feet? One? So many. Umbrella, club, lightning flash, barleycorn, fish. What other ones? Chakra? Lotus flower. So, yes. the residents of Vrindavan, they would see the lotus feet of Krishna imprinted upon the soft dust of Vrindavan. And we were remembering how Akura, upon seeing this, rolled in that dust, covered its body in that dust, absorbed and attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. One has to fix his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. And then Prabhupada concludes this purport by saying, then everything will be very nice. How do you do that again? My dear devotees. It's okay. I can't quite do it though. But my dear devotees, before we will hear Bhagavatam now, let us take a few moments in meditation to fix our mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. But you close your eyes, please. And while you're closing your eyes, I will prepare something. And I'll interrupt your meditation. Everyone close your eyes. And think of your Krishna, the Krishna that you have the most attraction to, affection for, perhaps the deity that you have served or looked at for many years. Think of that Krishna and bring him some offerings. Very, very humbly, bring him some offerings. Including your prayers. Tell him the deepest thoughts you have at this moment that are within your heart. The pain, the miseries, the happinesses, the aspirations. Present them to the lotus feet of Krishna. Then place Krishna on Govardhan Hill. But be careful not to walk on the hill yourself. And bring him anything and anyone that you think will bring pleasure to Krishna. And offer some service. Whatever service you would like to do, and how wonderful it is that with the mind we can bring pomegranates from Kashmir, water from the Jamuna, gold, anything, jewels, parrots. Now, as you keep your eyes closed, please, and keep Krishna fixed on Govardhan Hill in your mind. But I will play something now, some music. It is not fully spiritual music, but still it shocked me when I first heard this. Because I knew, and you all know, that Krishna plays the flute, and he has different kinds of flutes. And one of the flutes that he plays is called a bhangsi. But I had never heard a bhangsi. Listen to the unique sound of a bhangsi. And it is Krishna's long flute, and it is very deep. And Krishna uses this flute to call the gopis. Bamsivat. Thank you. now just keep your eyes closed and just complete your offerings to Krishna. And when you are finished, you can offer a prayer to Haridasa Varjo, the best of Krishna's servants, and then face this way. The text of the Bhagavatam that we read yesterday, does anyone remember anything from that? Yes, Anirudha. Krishna was going into the forest. The first day when he was looking after the cows. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else? Yes. Footprints, yes. What about the footprints? Yes. And making Braj what? Very fortunate. Oh, you can take out your sheets, by the way, because you should have all these verses right in front of you. The entire chapter. Krishna was just 6 years old then, and he became a Pashubala, no longer a calf herds boy, but a cow herds boy. This was a general description of this first day, and no specific pastime had yet been described. Now we'll begin with the second text. I'll read the first line or part of it, and please repeat after me. Tanmadavo venamudirayan vrito. Everyone. So tat, we can see very simply, means thus, Madhava, Lord Sri Madhava. Now this word Madhava has many meanings that we'll get to in just a moment. Madhava venam udirayan. He began to play or sound. Udirayan means sound. He began to sound his flute. Krishna had so many flutes. There's the Vamsi, the Venu, Murli.
Anandini.
Anandini. Or is that one of the qualities of Krishna that we'll later discuss?
We will hear about the whole chest of flutes which Krishna keeps in Nandagram, and about his two servants who are just carriers of the flutes, different sortiments of flutes.
So Krishna, he began to play his flute. Now, this is in the area of Vrindavan. He was mocking it. He was surrounded by his cowherd boyfriends. He was herding the cows, and he began to play his flute. Vrito. Vrito means surrounded by it. And then the next line. Gopal Grinadibir Saya Sho Balanvita. Please. Gopal. So Gopaya means continuing from the last word, Vrita Gopai Grinadi Bir, Srayasha. So he was surrounded completely by those gopas or cowherd boys. And what were they doing? Grinadi Bi, Srayasha. They were chanting his glories. Why were they chanting his glories? Because it was completely natural for them. Because their entire existence was simply based on their love for Krishna. They loved Krishna fully, and Krishna was so glorious. Their happiness, that which was in their heart, was coming out of their mouth. And what was in their heart? They were just thinking about how wonderful Krishna was. And indeed, Krishna is the wonderful one. Universes, even in his material aspect, the expansion of his expansion of his expansion of his expansion, universes come from the pores of his skin. He's so powerful. And here I am, illusion by Maya based on false ego. I'm trying to enjoy this world, trying to be an imitation Krishna. But it is just simply a poor quality, unbelievably poor quality imitation. Well, Krishna is truly glorious. Everything he does is glorious. And the more we hear about the glories of Krishna, the more this false ego dissolves, and the more we become attracted to him. The cowherd boys were spontaneously, naturally attracted to Krishna, and therefore, Grinadirbir, they surrounded him. Why were they surrounding him? They could not keep away from him. Later, we'll hear in this chapter how when Krishna entered the town of Braja, everyone saw him coming. Actually, before they saw him coming, they first saw the dust. They were returning, the cowherd boys, with Krishna was pushing the cows in front, and the cowherd boys were coming with Krishna. And the first thing is that someone saw the dust being raised by the hooves of the cows, and they would climb the watchtower. It has a specific name which I can't remember. Chandra Shalika. So one can view the moon, but it is the highest part of the building. And someone would say, there is the dust. Here comes just at this time of the day. The dust, the day is ending. The dusk is coming. And they'd be waiting because they hadn't seen Krishna all day long. This one moment felt like years, years, years. Because they were in love with Krishna, there was no other thought in their mind other than Krishna. Why? Because he's so beautiful. He's so glorious. So they would see the dust raised by the cows. Then the next thing is that they would hear Krishna's flute. And then after that, they would hear the cowherd boys chanting Krishna's like this. They were surrounding Krishna, chanting Krishna's glories. And what glories were they chanting? There's general glories. But what Krishna was doing during that day, oh, he has killed this Bakasura, he has killed this. They would be singing about Krishna. They had no other thought, completely natural for them. So that's what they were doing. Gopar Grinadibi Swayasho Balanvita. Balanvita means what? Bala Anvita means, who else was there? Krishna, the cowherd boys, and Balaram. The next line. Pasun paraskritya pasavyam avishad. What does that mean? The pasun, the animals, paraskritya, keeping them in front. It wasn't Krishna was walking first, but the animals were walking first, and Krishna was walking behind. Now, what effect does that have? Can anyone think of one effect that's going to have to walk? What would be one difference between walking in front of the animals and walking behind them, the cows? Yes, who said it? Yes. But I'm not going to call on you, because you called out. Yes. Yes. So Krishna, when he would come, especially... Yes.
Krishna walking behind the cows.
Very soothing.
Very soothing.
Yes. And Krishna's hair would be covered, and skin would be covered with the dust raised by the cow's hoofs. And Krishna's hair was very curly and bluish, blackish, blackish blue. And it would be tinged with all this dust, with reddish tinges also. And the dust would be there. And who was very simultaneously happy and unhappy? This made Krishna, it enhanced his beauty. Everything that happens to Krishna simply enhances his beauty. When he's decorated, he's so beautiful. Krishna, when he's out in the forest, it will describe later, that he doesn't wear a chadar.
or a shirt, because his chest is so beautiful. But he wears ornaments directly, and sometimes he'll take a peacock feather, and he doesn't wear a lot of makut and helmets and things like that, but he just takes the peacock feather and places it in his hair. But who feels, when they see Krishna's body covered by dust, who feels simultaneously anxiety and the greatest of pleasure? Yes, mothers, because mothers, oh, my boy is so dirty. And the greatest of pleasure, oh, now he needs me to bathe him. So then they were, and this is in the last four verses, it describes how mother not the last four actually, but the almost the final section. There are six verses that describe Krishna's entering into Vrindavan. And four of those verses describe Mother Yasoda and Rohini, how they bathe him. All day long they couldn't see Krishna. So they were crying and crying, and while they were crying, who was happy? Who is happy? Yes, Krishna is happy whether he's here or there, but while they're crying, who's happy? The coward boys are so happy, and who else are happy? Srimati Radharani. Not when she's with the cows and the calves. And not only the cows and calves happy, but all the forest animals are happy. But then when Krishna enters into the back from the forest into Vrindavan, the animals come to the edge of the forest and they just stand there. Krishna enters into the city and the animals just stand there, waiting the whole night for Krishna to enter again the next morning. So, pushing the cows in front, Pashun Priskritya Pasyavam Avishad. This is him going out though, not coming back. Keeping the animals in front, Pasavyam, full of nourishment for the cows. Avishad, he entered for the first time. What? Vihartukama kusamakaramvanam. He entered Vihartukama, desiring to enjoy pastimes. Kusama akaram, rich with flowers. Vanam, he entered that Vrindavan forest, desiring to enjoy pastimes. He entered that Vrindavan forest, which was enriched with flowers. We look at now and don't see so many flowers, at least I don't. We were talking before about what kind of vegetation existed in Krishna's time. This was the job of who? To arrange the forest so it would be perfect just for Vrindadevi. Now Krishna was finally entering Vrindavan forest with the cows and the boys, and everyone was ecstatic because they would have their chance to make their offerings to Krishna. The forest was full of flowers. The next verse describes what the forest was like, so I won't speak too much about it right now. Let's hear. I'll read the purport by the BBT translators, and then we'll hear the translation and the purport. Thus desiring to enjoy pastimes, Lord Madhava, sounding his flute, surrounded by cowherd boys who were chanting his glories, and accompanied by Lord Balaram, kept the cows before him and entered the Vrindavan forest, which was full of flowers and rich with nourishment for the animals. He desired to enjoy pastimes. This is something that it is difficult for a conditioned soul to accept. He has the legitimate right. His constitution is simply to enjoy. It's not me. If I desire to go somewhere to enjoy my pastimes, Dananda Maharaj will capture me and say, "You're in my operation." Everyone will say that if I desire to enjoy, it's Maya. But Krishna's desiring to enjoy is his natural position. The purport. And this is how he's choosing to enjoy, as Prabhupada said, it's natural village life. Simply wandering around the forest, all full of his devotees. Everything in Vrindavan is devoted to Krishna fully. Not even 98.9% or 99.9%. 100% they simply are interested in having Krishna enjoy. Are you ready to go there? If anyone hesitated, there's one Mataji, Gauri Dasi, who was who lived in Los Angeles and was a book distributor. She left this world in Vrindavan perhaps 10 or 12 years ago. And Jagatrini Mataji was caring for her. She was very, very ill, sick, until she finally left this world. And she didn't actually accept that she was leaving until 3 days before she left. Because naturally, the soul, it's proper to struggle. But 3 days before she left, she was very, very strong, too, a very strong person. Jagtarini Mataji heard her say, "No, it's not worth it." And she asked her, because that's all she said, "No, it's not worth it." She asked her, what were you thinking of that made you say, "No, it's not worth it"? And Gauri Mataji replied, "I was thinking about the temple where I serve in Los Angeles, and right across the street from the temple, there is a Govinda's restaurant. And in that Govinda's restaurant, they serve corn chips with avocado spread. And I was wishing I could just eat some of that. But then I realized, if I do that, if I have that desire, then I'm going to have to take another birth to satisfy that desire." And I said, "No, it's not worth it." So be honest, alone or with a dearmost friend, be honest and see what is in your heart, what's in our hearts, what's in my heart. Go through the inventory of the mind and the heart and see what desires are there that stop us from immediately saying yes. I only want to be with Krishna, and I'm willing to give up or accept anything that will bring me to his lotus feet in Vrindavan. See what desires are in our heart, lurking in there, or very prominently there, and see if it is worth it to fulfill those desires. Purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami has explained the various meanings of the word Madhava as follows. Because tan madhava venamu darayam vrito. Madhava entered the forest of Vrindavan and played his flute. So Sanatana Goswami has explained the various meanings of the word Madhava as follows. Madhava normally indicates Krishna to be the Lord who is the consort of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. This name also implies that Lord Krishna descended in the dynasty of Maru, because Krishna is born in the Maru dynasty and he's called Madhava too. Since the spring season is also known as Madhava, it is understood that as soon as Lord Krishna entered the Vrindavan forest, it automatically exhibited all the opulences of spring. Everything was freshly green. The flowers were all blooming. Everything had the freshness of spring because Krishna was entering and it was for his pleasure. It became filled with flowers, breezes, and the celestial atmosphere. And there is Krishna. Beautiful Krishna there. Another reason Lord Krishna is known as Madhava is that he enjoys his pastimes in Madhu. We say Madhurya Leela. Madhu means what? Sweet or honey. So this Madhurya Leela is the sweetest when Krishna performs these conjugal pastimes. And there is one verse that I am trying to learn, and perhaps I even know it, from that Bilamangala Thakur said, describing the sweetness of Krishna, because indeed Krishna is Madhava, Krishna is Madhu, he is so sweet. So the verse is Madhuram Madhuram Vapu Asya Vibhu, which means so sweet, Madhuram Madhuram, so sweet. His body, Vapu, is powerfully sweet, powerful and sweet. Madhuram Madhuram Madhur Vadanam Madhuram, but sweeter than his body. Look at his body from the tip of his toes to the top. It is simply sweet. But sweeter than the sweetest part of his body, Vadanam, is his face, which is so sweet. And then Madhu Gandhi Mridu Smrita O Etaroho. Madhuram 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 Madhuram. Madhuram, 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 Madhuram. Four times sweet, sweet, sweet. He says a ho, a tada ho means an exclamation. Oh, what is most sweet is his smile, which is Madhu Gandhi. This is incredible metaphor. And mridu smritam, it is very slightly smiling. It's not like this, a big toothy smile, which is considered very impolite, but very, very subtle. Look at his subtle, sweet smile. And it is compared to Madhu Gandha. What does Madhu Gandha mean? What does Madhu mean? Honey. The fragrance of honey. It is subtle. Like the fragrance of honey. When we think of honey, we think of its taste, which isn't actually subtle. But honey has a very fine and subtle fragrance. And that is like Krishna's smile. Madhuram, Madhuram, oho, etaro, oh, just relish the smile of Krishna, which is very subtle, and it is sweet, like the fragrance of honey. And Kapila Muni, when describing through Astanga Yoga, the meditation upon Krishna going up from his lotus feet to his lotus knees, to his lotus chest, right to his face, and describing his smile, he says that Hasam Hare Avanata Akila. He says that this smile is so wonderful of Krishna's, Vishoshanam Tivra Asu Shoka Sagara. It is like an ocean that will dry up. It is like the sweet, it is like it will dry up the ocean of misery and lamentation that comes from being in the material world if one meditates on the smile of Krishna. He tells this to his mother, Devahuti. You meditate upon the smile of Krishna and it will dry up this ocean of tears, which means existence in the material world. Because if we meditate on this very sweet smile, but not before meditating upon his lotus feet, his service, and the service to the servants of his lotus feet. But if then we gradually raise ourselves to meditate on his lotus smile, our material existence will be finished. This purport continues. Lord Krishna would loudly sound his flute as he entered the forest of Sri Vrindavan, thus giving inconceivable bliss to the residents of his hometown, Brajadam. These simple pastimes of playfully entering the forest, playing on the flute and so forth, were performed daily in the spiritual land of Vrindavan. This chapter is going to describe the word kechit comes out a lot. Sometimes Krishna would do this, sometimes he would do this, but this is to give us an idea of what Krishna would do every day. This is all Nitya Leela. It's eternally going on. We'll read some of the comments of the Acharyas. We'll read Sanatana Goswami's comment. After a general description of how they tended the cows and so on, now will come the variegated pastimes in detail, which were sweeter than the sweet. The word tat indicates why Krishna played his flute while he entered the forest. Tat indicated playing the flute with the sweetness of his beautiful bud-like lips for the purpose of giving joy to the residents of Vrindavan, because the residents of Vrindavan were waiting in the town. They had not seen Krishna for a half hour or an hour. And he was letting them know by his flute playing, he was announcing his entrance into the forest. Or then Sanatana Goswami gives an alternative explanation of why Krishna has played his flute. Or he played his flute due to his own rising of joy entering the forest. He was expressing his own ecstasy. The word avivesha entered means he entered and that all the animals, all the birds, trees, and so on present became absorbed, avishta, in Lord Krishna. Madhava incidentally implies that he gave pleasure to that forest just as the spring season gives it pleasure. Text 3. Any questions on this text or any additional points about Krishna entering the forest, the Vrindavan forest? And this pastimes will be described later, that will be described, they take place just here around Govardhan Hill. Anyone want to add anything? Yes, about Krishna and anything? And each of the animals and each of the residents of Vrindavan has specific opulences, like the birds with their flying and their chirping, the parrots, we can hear them sometimes, and the trees with their fruits, and the deers with their eyes, their doe-like eyes, and the peacocks with their dancing. So everyone would have an opportunity to offer their own opulence to Krishna. And each soul is an individual. That means it has individual opulences and individual characteristics and an individual flavor and taste and an individual something to offer that no one else has. They're also obedient. And he's playing his flute, so they know he's right there. That is what I would be able to think. This is, if they would just be completely non-cooperative, they want to participate in the pastimes. You know, this is that they want to give Krishna pleasure. Sometimes they wander away when he's cowherding them, and they wander away seeking grass. But then when he's counting the cows, he's calling them back. He counts on his manimala, his jeweled like japamala, made out of jewels. And then if he sees some cow is not there, he'll call that cow by the name, by his name. He'll know which cow isn't there. So I would imagine there's some cows who want a little special attention. Sometimes they'll stay away and then just to hear Krishna call their name. Not that I was like a cow, but when I was initiated, when Prabhupada first named me, he gave me the name Vishnujan. And then after an hour, someone came and said, Prabhupada said, your name's not Vishnujan, it's Burijan. But really, it was like, that's how people talk in New York, what can we do? But I wanted to hear Prabhupada say it with his own mouth in the same way. So after a Bhagavad Gita class one night in his room, I said, what was my name again, Prabhupada? Swamiji, what was my name again? He said, Burijan, something. Oh, Madhuram, Madhuram. It was very sweet. But I felt like I had, you know, when dealing with Prabhupada, you know, you didn't want to waste his time. So you did something like that, and you felt after you'd maybe shrink from his presence a bit. But then those are the jewels that were really left with at this point.
Meaning of Burijan?
That he never said the meaning. But there's different things it could mean. But for years, I never thought of asking him what it meant even. It's true. Should we read, see if we can read one more verse? Yes. So this is the third verse. But this is in the early days of the movement when the Bhagavatam classes, they were less lectures than, there would be lectures, but everyone was new and no one really, everyone was of the same batch, so to speak, but there would be a lot of discussion in the very early days. And Prabhupada said to discuss the points threadbare and then perhaps go over the words like that. So text 3. Tanma jugo shalim riga dvija kulam. So that forest, this charming, or manju means charming, that forest, they walked in and there was the manju goshali in that, in the ali, or the bees. There were bees that were humming. And there were mriga. Mriga means what? Deer. Or animals. And dvija kulam means the birds. Akula means filled. So that forest, as Maharaj had just said, it was filled with all the birds and the bees and the animals that were presenting their offerings to Krishna and welcoming him with their personal opulences and their offerings as they entered. Mahanmana prakya paya saraswata. So, this is a description of the forest as Krishna entered. And this forest had a Saraswata, a lake, Paya, whose waters were so clear, unpolluted, and crystal clear that it resembled the Mahatman, the mind of a great soul. Now, what do you think of when you hear that? The waters were as clear as the mind of a great soul, as the consciousness of a great soul. What do you think of? First, yes. Yes, very poetic. What else? What does this? The word clear in the Bhagavatam, when we talked about the chitta in the creation that was clear, swachatam, it meant, yes, Aniruddha. Yes. There's nothing inhibiting it. Yes. Nice. Yes. Yes. Yeah. What is the mud that makes our minds, or what is the mud? What is the mud and the ripple? What makes the differentiates the mind of a great soul from the mind of a poor soul? It's the lack of clarity of consciousness, because in that clear chitta, satchitam, one can see Vasudev, one can see Krishna, and that's what makes someone great. So that is goodness. And what muddies the consciousness is passion and ignorance. Therefore, the practices, the sadhana of Krishna consciousness is meant, and especially the chanting of Krishna's names, is meant to allow all that mud and turbulence of the mind to settle, so that our consciousness becomes clear. Because this is so much of the problem, because of the false ego, there's such an enjoying spirit induced by the modes of passion and ignorance. And therefore, we cannot clearly see in accurate perspective what is actually there. Because Krishna is the, even in the material world, he is present everywhere. And the second of the Chaturshloki verses of the Bhagavatam explains that Ritairitam ya pratyaita na pratyaita chatmini yadvidvadatmayomayad yatabasho yatatama, that anything that appears separate from Krishna, know this to be the action of the illusory energy or maya, because Krishna is there. Everything is simply resting on him. Sutre maniginaiva. So the clear mind of a sadhu, of the mahat, of a devotee, he perceives Krishna in everything and everywhere. And no matter where he goes, he is with Krishna. So therefore, in Krishna consciousness, remember that quotation where Prabhupada said one must seriously practice? That seriously means, I want this, and I'm ready to not do this and not do this. All this, the things that we tend to flirt with in the material world, just make the mud of our consciousness of passion, ignorance, come up and cloud our consciousness. I use that term. We flirt with the material energy unless we become seduced by it. No, but we should not. That seduction is caused by the enjoying spirit. So we have to replace that serious means, replacing it with a serving spirit. This is the real task of life. So Mahan Mana Prakya Paya Saraswata. This is what was greeting Krishna, the clear waters of a beautiful lake in the Vrindavan forest, along with the animals, the birds, and the ali. The bees. What is the opulence of the bees? They're always, yes, we'll hear about that. They make a very pleasing humming sound, and of course, they supply honey. Next line. Vatena jushtam shatapatra gandina. Vatena, the wind, jushtam, served. Even the wind was serving Krishna. Vayu was serving Krishna. How? By bringing the fragrance of this, of Satapatra Gandina, of the 100-petaled lotus flowers, carrying that fragrance to the nostrils of Krishna. And we'll notice something from the purport, if we haven't noticed it already. I'll read the last line, so we actually will possibly get to the purport. Nirikshirantum Bhagavan Manodade. Everyone. So with all this going on, with the birds and the clear atmosphere, and water itself just tends to cool the consciousness down, cool to make the mind peaceful. So, and the fragrance of the lotus flowers, the nirikshirantam, observing. So Krishna walked in and observing this reception, observing the beauty of the Vrindavan forest. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mana Dhade, his mind turned, Rantum, to take pleasure. He wanted to enjoy there. The Vrindavan forest had been successful. They had turned his mind to wanting to enjoy. It had provided a facility for his pleasure. They were servants. They had been successful. They created an atmosphere in which Krishna wanted to enjoy. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over that forest, which resounded with the charming sound of bees. Maharaj? Yes. What is the charming sound of bees? Animals and birds, which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the minds of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of 100-petaled lotuses. Seeing all this, Lord Krishna decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. Lord Krishna saw that the Vrindavan forest was giving pleasure to all five senses. Each of the senses were being pleased. Whose senses? Krishna's senses. Each of the breezes, they carried the fragrance that would please Krishna's nostrils. The birds making the sounds that would please Krishna's ears. The breeze also touching the lotus-like soft skin of Krishna. And he was looking and seeing all this beauty. Each of his senses. I'll read it. The wind, the bees, birds, and animals made charming sounds that brought sweet pleasure to the ears. They were successful. The wind was faithfully rendering service to the Lord by blowing throughout the forest, carrying the cool moisture of a transparent lake, and thus giving pleasure to the sense of touch. By the sweetness of the wind, even the sense of taste was being stimulated. And the fragrance of lotus flowers was bringing pleasure to the nostrils. And the entire forest was endowed with heavenly beauty, which was giving spiritual bliss to the eyes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has thus explained the significance of this verse. Everything was centered around facilitating Krishna's pleasure. I'll just, to end this, we won't read, there are comments to read, but perhaps we'll save that for tomorrow. Actually, in this verse, there aren't comments to read. Yes, there is. But I won't read those. But I'll just tell you one little story, which is the exact personal, it's a confession, perhaps, which is, I've mentioned it before, but it tells why Birijan Das is not in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. I was reading, this was many years ago, I was reading Lalita Madhava, but Vidagdha Madhava for the first time. And it was about Krishna going to the forest, and it was similar to this, and Krishna's pastimes in the forest. And suddenly, I had a vision. Not a descending spiritual vision, really, but I saw an image of what the spiritual world was like. And this is what was presented to me. I saw cows, a picture that had billions of cows in it. It was full of cows. There was cows everywhere. And Krishna and Balaram and all the cowherd boys were walking with all these cows, and Krishna was playing his flute and enjoying with Balaram. And suddenly, although I knew this before, I understood that Krishna has billions, and the whole picture was full of unlimited cows. And I understood that Krishna had billions and billions of servants, and everyone was wanting to please him. And if I went to Vrindavan, this is how my mind worked, that I'd be one of just billions and billions and billions of servants, an insignificant servant. And all the top positions were already filled. And what I thought immediately, I'm ashamed to say this, but I thought, maybe I'm in the wrong movement. This is what keeps us here, keeps me here. Yes. Maybe I'm in the right movement. But yet we still have to be satisfied with being insignificant servants. Because what do we have to offer? Who can please Krishna better? The most beautiful woman of this world or Srimati Radharani? So therefore the devotees don't aspire. You hear people going around saying, Radhe, Radhe, Sham, Radhe, 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 give me Sham. But no, that is not the mood of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. It's Radhe, how in the world can we somehow facilitate the servants of the servant of the servant? So, here Bhakti Vinod Thakur talking about his own perfected service. I'll make some camphor and hand it to someone who is a servant of Krishna. What can just an insignificant servant of a servant of a servant? Therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when you wake up in the morning, the first thing you should do is beat your mind 100 times, and then before you go to sleep, because that mind is grasping onto being the false ego of I am the center, and it won't bring us what we actually want. Balo Kiriraj Daraki Jai!